Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintech Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Lots more to get into here before Kevin Woodley joins us at 1 o'clock. And this is maybe one of my, it's not a serious thing, but it's maybe a pet peeve of mine in the Vancouver hockey discussion, which as soon as a line gets together and has like three or four good games, the line name suggestion thing starts to really kick into high gear. And it happened last year with the Blueger Garland and Joshua line, and we never landed on one, and that's fine. And it's starting to happen again now with the Pettersson, DeBrusque, and Sherwood. And I first became aware of this suggestion. I heard it on Halford and Brough. Somebody texted it in. Somebody replied to you at The Athletic as well with the suggestion. Do you want to share it with our audience?
Oh, the Depeche Mode
Depeche
line. So you've got
Mode.
DeBrusque, D-E.
Yep.
P-E, Pettersson. And then Sherwood.
Yeah.
Depeche. Yeah,
and
honestly, one thing that appeals to me is
it your shoulder reaching that hard?
Well, he didn't come,
up with it. It's a suggestion.
But I agree with you.
I agree with you, too, to be clear. But it's not bad. I like it,
no,
especially because it goes left to right. It's
okay.
Like, and it harkens back to another famous West Coast athlete in Marshawn Lynch.
What? How does it work?
Beast mode,
Depeche mode.
And I think,
okay,
and I
okay,
think the fact
now
that
you really pulled a muscle.
No, I'm serious. And I think the idea that this line is like, you know, DeBrusque is such a nice guy, talkative.
Yes.
Pettersson, a little bit too cool.
Yep.
Right. You've got Sherwood. Right. Like they're kind of like cool guys, bunch of chill guys, dog meme guys. You know. And so I kind of like it. I'll be honest with you.
This is all over the place.
That's
all over the place. But what are the... okay.
Well, obviously, every line nickname is all over the place.
No, it's not.
Sure.
Let's invoke
the Cold War when it comes to Pavel Bure. Let's invoke local transit options.
That's not a line nickname. That's a player nickname.
Let's invoke local transit options.
It's got a local connection.
Let's invoke...
They play on the West Coast. They go fast. West Coast Express.
Let's invoke the opium of the masses in reference to the Besser, Miller, Pettersson line.
Thomas Drance just can't get enough.
I think the opiate of the masses is religion, by the way, isn't it?
It used to be.
Now it's the lottery.
Now it's making money fast.
By the way, I'm not saying that. Nobody get offended. I believe that's what the quote is referencing, though, isn't it?
I don't know, man.
Isn't it?
I'm not going to be affiliated
right,
with you and your anti-religious.
Yeah, that's me.
Anyway, the fact is that my view of lines and nicknames, okay, is if you have to take too long to explain the nickname, and if once you've explained the nickname, people aren't immediately like, oh, that's really good. I don't think it's a good one.
No. And also, here's the thing. Somebody texts in, what the heck does Depeche mean? So I think there's probably a younger generation who are not aware of the band Depeche Mode. But my other problem, so first of all, it's a stretch. Like, just you have to explain it, right? It's not immediately obvious what you're going for. You have to explain it, and you're taking the parts of the names. But then it's like, well, what do they have in common with Depeche Mode, the band? You know what I mean? That, like, if there was a real strong, clear, logical link between this line and the, as I read from Wikipedia, English electronic music,
well,
Depeche Mode.
Well, there's four of them.
Yeah, so off to a good start already.
No, you know what? The one thing I do like about it, though, right, is the meaning of Depeche Mode is what? Like, fast? Go fast? Hurried fashion?
Is that what it's about?
Yeah, Depeche Mode. If, like, you went to school in Montreal.
Yeah, but I don't know any French.
So
I have no idea.
Depeche would be like a quick dispatch and mode,
okay.
Right? So the rough translation is like execute a task in a hurried fashion.
Okay.
It kind of works for a fast, speedy line.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're on the West Coast of Canada, so no one understands French. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Look,
it's like, what?
Look, it's a stretch. I'm not endorsing it.
Okay.
I've heard worse suggestions. Like, No,
I've heard worse suggestions for sure.
In the world of
because
line,
we hear a lot of the suggestions for the line names.
In the world of bad line nicknames, this one qualifies as less bad than most.
It's also the thing is, I don't need to come on and like inveigh against it because it's obviously not going to stick. Nobody is going to be calling
the line
Depeche Mode.
No, you're coming out against the line.
Okay, slow down.
You don't think they have staying power?
Slow down there, buddy.
No, look, we'll see.
The name is obviously not going
to
stick.
End of the day, they've had 2 good weeks.
Yeah.
You know, like, we can give it enough time to gel and see if it's has staying power and lasts, right? I mean, the truth.
Like, in the last 20 years, 25 years, I can think of 3 line names that have really stuck. The West Coast Express, the Lotto line, and the Mattress line.
Well, the Mattress line's the best line.
And the Mattress line is just like, because the other 2 lines were elite. I get that.
They had an incredible 2.5 month run.
The Mattress line.
Yeah. It was incredible.
Okay. That's fine. That's great. But that one stuck off the quality of the nickname.
The nickname was so good.
So there's a balance between like line significance and nickname quality. And if the line is not that significant, the nickname quality has to be off the charts, like the Mattress line. You know what
yes.
I mean? Whereas if it's an elite line for an extended period of time, you can get by with having a more generic nickname. Although I like West Coast Express and the Lotto line. But my point is, like, we have to, unless somebody just hits it out of the park with a nickname, which Depeche Mode is not coming close to, we have to wait and let this line develop a little bit of a legacy. You know what I mean? Like the Sedins and Burrows. Best line for the Canucks of the last, 15 years? They didn't have a nickname.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it really, the circumstances have to be just right for it to stick.
Well, and they got put together what? Like, it was after or before the Islanders game. Sherwood got.
Okay, yeah.
So that's, we're talking about a 5-game stretch since the game against the Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
5 games. Now, week 649, the Lotto line was dubbed the Lotto line after way less time than that. It was like 2 games.
Yeah, and that one's just sitting there.
It's too good. 649, we all get it. You know, like you say it, it makes sense, it registers immediately. You know, people like the nickname so much that even if the combinations on the line are mixed up, everyone still wants to call it 649. Even though it's materially different. So, you know, I think that's just a callback. I don't actually care anymore. I've long since capitulated on this one, Jamie. It 5 games, that's probably not enough. Right?
No.
Not a hot take.
Of course not. Check back in like February. If they've been torching the league for like 3 months come February, we can get in the lab and we can start thinking of line names. Although even then, I'm skeptical that it'll come up.
You two need to reach out and touch faith.
Heck of a fun run, though. Here, Elias Pettersson, since the line got put together, okay? 14.6% on ice shooting, 961 on ice save percentage.
That's right.
And Vancouver's goaltending hasn't necessarily even been great during that stretch, but just completely throttling opponents efficiency-wise. Kiefer Sherwood, since the line got put together, 19.4 on ice shooting.
Let's go.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Yeah. Let's give this line a little bit of time.
We don't have to rush things here, guys. Okay?
I don't know that Kiefer Sherwood's going to keep carrying a 20% conversion clip at 5-on-5, even if this line stays together for another 5 games.
I really like this text about the meaning of Depeche in French. If my French immersion 20 years ago taught me anything, it means of fish. That's a good language joke.
Depeche.
Well played. Fish mode. That's a good text. A lot of other people are texting in. Now, this is a big like generational divide going from Depeche Mode, right? Which I think a lot of our younger listeners not that familiar with. The other suggestion is the DPS line, which is a video game reference, the damage per second line. DPS, DeBrusk, Pettersson, Sherwood. I don't think that one's going to catch on either.
2 nicknames you really got to explain.
We need DPS. DPS has the added problem of being shorthand for the Department of Player Safety.
Yeah.
I guess we call it DOPS, but still.
And I think we need something that bridges generations, that doesn't have at least like half of the fan base being like, I don't know what that is. What are we talking about? I don't understand that reference.
That's impossible, though, because the younger generation, it's going to be named after some TikTok star.
The Rizzler line.
The big justice line.
Oh, no. The Costco guys, because they play next to Costco.
There you go. Big justice.
That's a boom.
Big Jake. Jake DeBrus can be Big Jake, like Big Justice.
Big DeBruskus.
Oh, man. How about that? Right.
How about that?
That's not bad.
No,
Big
DeBruskus. Terrible. Big DeBruskus.
Big DeBruskus. It's fun to say.
It is fun to say. All right.
All right. I do like. I do kind of like the Costco guys.
They walk
though, I gotta
into
say.
Rogers Arena with a chicken bake.
I do kind of like the Costco guys.
Do you?
All right. I mean, no, not like the actual, but I like it as a nickname because they play next to Costco.
The Costco guys.
That's kind of funny to me.
Yeah. Not bad.
Like you shouldn't choose something inherently ephemeral that everyone will have forgotten about in 3 months to name a line off of. So I'm against it, but I do think it's kind of funny. Anyways, all right. 650. If you have just an incredible, incredible line name that you want to share, you can text in. But you can also text in other stuff.
You can also keep it yourself. I'm just kidding.
Tony texts in. Tony's texting in solidarity with my Purolator crusade. He says, we can't call them the Purolator line because unlike Purolator, they actually deliver.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tony.
Quality.
Shout out to
High
Tony.
High quality.
All right. We'll move on here. One of the other takeaways from the game in Ottawa. Well, first of all, shout out to Max Sasson for playing his first NHL game, scoring, picking up his first NHL point as well on a nice feed to Teddy Bluger. That's awesome. And, you know, we talked to Ryan Johnson the day before he made his NHL debut, and he shared just kind of the excitement in the organization, but also from Max about playing that game. You saw the reaction from his family on the stands and everything.
How cool is his dad?
Oh, it was so awesome.
That was
so great.
That was so sick.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
It was just so cool. Like, his dad could not have been more thrilled. And then, you know, they're joking on the broadcast about their phones blowing up. And,
yep.
But yeah, that was a phenomenal moment. And a really nice play in transition, by the way, started by Tyler Myers. You got one of those plays that I'm talking about in Tyler Myers.
Yep.
From Tyler Myers, where he squeezes in the neutral zone. At this time, it was the red line, not the blue line. So I don't know that that's like surfing the way we usually define it. But Tyler Myers gets his stick in there, uses his reach, keys the counter, and that was it, right? And then the Canucks get another one off neutral zone defending. That was what was so good about the Canucks game, from my perspective, is their neutral zone defense fed their offense. You have Sherwood just completely flummoxing Tyler Cleven in this neutral zone battle that springs like can't miss 2-on-1. DeBrusk, great finish, but I mean, that was a brilliant piece of work by Sherwood defensively, and a brilliant piece of work by Myers. Doesn't get credit for a point on the play, but Myers, much maligned over the course of the season, he will do that once every 5 games, and it is huge, especially when this Canucks team is able to defend the way that they did on Saturday. The ability of Myers to defend like Mutombo used to. It's Alonzo Mourning. Alonzo Mourning was the guy who pioneered the block that was also
a pass
to key that. Yep. Like, Myers has one of those every 5 games. I swear he's one of the best in the league at making that specific type of defensive stop in the neutral zone. And this Canucks team's built to capitalize off it at a higher clip than they were last year.
Well, that's the interesting thing, right? Because we've talked so much about the lack of puck moving and that being an issue for jump-starting the rush offense, but another way you can do it, they showed on Saturday, right, which is breaking up those plays in the neutral zone, and that was one of their strengths last year, right? How often did we talk about that, the neutral zone wedge, right, and breaking up plays in that part of the ice? That should be a strength, especially of the Myers-Soucy line, right? Like, Myers has the mobility and the pairing, I should say. Myers has the mobility and the reach to be able to do it. Soucy's has been really good at it in his career and even last year with the Canucks, and I thought it was an interesting kind of proof of concept of marrying one of the strengths of last year's team with some of the new things you've brought in, the new elements you've brought in, the forwards who can score and punish teams off the rush. That was interesting. And I think it was also with Quinn Hughes leaving the game in the first period, and we know it's like there's not even a way I can accurately capture it. We know how important he is to the blue line. Yeah, no kidding. But for Myers to step up and have that play, right? Carson Soucy, most 5-on-5 minutes for the team, and they, you know, he was +2. They outshot the Senators in his minutes. Like, that's an important marker, I think, for Carson Soucy. Eric Brännström getting a chance. I thought Filip Hronek had a good game. Like, a lot of guys on that blue line stepped up, took on heavier loads, and had good performances as well.
Well, what's so fascinating about this, and unfortunately we don't have the practice lineup tweets from IMAC and Murph, you know, who are just enjoying their chowder a little too much, perhaps. But the club entered that game against the Senators having changed their second pair for the first time in a game all season. They entered for the first three shifts, because that was all we got to see before Hughes sustained a misconduct. It was Branstrom Myers, and then it was Soucy and Juulsen. So as well as Soucy ended up playing, and as frequently as he was used 5-on-5, and granted, like, Hronek would have led the team in 5-on-5 minutes, except there were so many special teams minutes, and he was such a big part of both the power play and the penalty kill that I think, you know, the five shifts at even strength before someone took another dumb penalty sort of limited his 5-on-5 ice time, right? But Soucy got dropped to the third pair.
Yep.
Like, that's a real thing that happened. And then Branstrom finishes second among all Canucks defenders in 5-on-5 ice time. So he played top pair minutes, played 5 minutes or 4.5 minutes anyway against Tim Stützle, played 3.5 minutes against Brady Tkachuk. We very rarely see Branstrom log that kind of ice time against the opponent's top six. And he handled it well. He wasn't on the ice for a goal for, but he wasn't on the ice for a goal against.
Mm-hmm.
And his shots on goal margin was the best on among the remaining Canucks defenders. So, you know, I'm curious to see how the Canucks handle their minutes on defense, especially with 4 road games in 6 days here, right? Like, this is going to be a pretty condensed portion of the schedule and an important one, and the club is shorthanded. Are we going to see Branstrom's role continue to tick up? Because it's taken him an awfully long time to build trust, given his level of performance. Like, usually if you have a player like Branstrom come in and perform at the level that he's performed at, which has been very high,
mm-hmm.
and you have a second pair that's struggled to the extent that Vancouver's second pair has struggled, usually it doesn't take 15, 19 games for us to see something more meaningful in terms of a shift in usage. And we are not seeing usage shift. Like, Branstrom is gone from like 22% share of defensive ice time 5-on-5 to like 28%. That's, I mean, credit to him. He's had to scrape and claw for that, but that has been very gradual given how well he's performed.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, it looks like maybe the club's ready to trust him a little bit more here, but we'll learn a lot. Like, we've got a back-to-back, you know, Tocchet and Adam Foote are going to have to be pretty careful about how they manage their blue line minutes here. I want to talk really quickly about Hronek before we move off of this topic, by the way, because without Hughes, Hronek had a fantastic game.
Yep.
And yet, you know, I do think the idea of Hronek, like, it's so interesting because I felt like that game demonstrated Hronek's value very clearly. And yet also, I think, demonstrated the limitations of the idea of, like, Hronek as a guy carrying his own pair to some extent.
Okay.
Especially in those minutes where he wasn't paired with Branstrom. And Branstrom Hronek looked really good, by the way, and is something maybe we should put in our back pocket here. But there were, just watching the game, there were some moments where Hronek, who is not the most active puck carrier, he's a very dynamic puck mover because he's a good passer and he has that no-look thing we always talk about. But as a puck carrier through the neutral zone, not his bread and butter,
yep.
not his strength. And I thought you could see that. Like, I thought that showed where you'd have, like, a defender draped on him with, like, their stick on the other side. And he's, like, able to skate out of trouble just enough to make the right play. But it does not look smooth or easy at all.
He definitely did a lot more carrying the puck than he would normally do, obviously, with Quinn Hughes.
But don't you think the seams showed?
It worked, but you're right. It wasn't the kind of thing where you saw it and like, I want to see more of that. Like,
also,
it worked in that game, but it wasn't necessarily like something you feel good about as a plan A.
It wasn't something that made me come away from it being like, they need to manufacture more opportunities for Hronek to key the attack with his feet. Right? Like, I like Hronek having an exit or like a pressure release valve and then being able to work with the space that Hughes creates for him, because I think he can be devastating with that gravity being exerted on the left side of the ice when he's the guy who's counted on to exert gravity. I mean, it worked against the Senators on Saturday night, but would it work against a higher level of competition, a team that was playing, you know, a better? And I still think the Senators are a dangerous opponent, but they certainly weren't on Saturday night. I didn't think they had it.
They're going through it right now.
They're going through it, and you could tell against tough against Vegas. Do I want to see Hronek in those spots? I don't really. So it was a really interesting game where I thought he performed really well, and yet in some ways it diminished my enthusiasm to see the like idea of the Hronek more assertive, driving his own pair, guy. Like, sometimes you have a guy who's tailor-made to capitalize off of what one of your star players can create.
Yep.
That's the real Burrow's lesson. Bouchard with McDavid is another really good example, right? And it's partly why I roll my eyes at the Hughes-Bouchard comparisons, right? Because it's like, no. Bouchard's the guy who can eat.
Yeah.
But McDavid's the guy who sets the table and also can eat. I like Hronek more as a pressure release valve, able to capitalize and do cool stuff off of what Hughes creates. I thought seeing him in that role for a full game, and we haven't gotten to see it very often during his Canucks tenure with the way Hronek and Hughes have been glued together, it left me wanting a little bit and not necessarily wanting more.
I also think the split Hughes and Hronek thing up, which I've been very curious to see at different points, it's not like, it's obviously not a product of that pair. They're great. They're fantastic together. It's a product of the second pair not working. Now, to your point, okay, we actually did see them get split up. We just didn't get any sample size of it. But if they do start to mix things up a little bit on the other two pairings, then there's no pressure to split up Hughes and Hronek, right? Like, if you start to get things working with the other options you have, whether it's Branstrom moving up and playing with Myers, whether it's Derek Forbort coming back and changing the look of the blue line at some point, then I think it becomes much less of a front burner issue, the idea of splitting Hughes and Hronek up. I mean, there's a reason we never talked about it last season, right? Because the other defensive pairs were working. So it was like, there's no reason to think about it. Everything's working. That's fine. I completely understand wanting to exhaust all of your other options before you start to go down that road for some of the reasons that you bring up there. But interesting to see Branstrom, and I don't have a problem with them just kind of very deliberately continuing to do these small increases in the workload they're giving him until it stops working, right? Why not? He's done everything they've asked of him so far. Okay, we'll take a break here. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine, he will join us next. We'll ask his thoughts about the Canucks' performance in Ottawa. Thatcher Demko may be getting closer to a return. What the Canucks can expect from Jeremy Swayman in Boston as well. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Canucks have wrapped up practice in Boston. They're going to take on the Bruins tomorrow. Joining us now to chat about this road trip for the Canucks from NHL.com and InGoal Magazine, he's a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. He is Kevin Woodley. Woodley, what's going on, man?
Not much. It's a little, just enjoying a little break here while the team's on the road.
So yeah.
Not having to go to the rink every day for a couple weeks.
Nice extended road trip. Lots of that, those little breaks for you guys, which is nice. So they lose against the Rangers, but you know, I think everyone, including the team, agreed that it looked like a better performance. Then they go and play really well, I thought, against Ottawa, get the first win of the road trip under their belts. Are you buying that we're seeing the Canucks starting to kind of refine their identity after a bit of an up and down start to the year?
I mean, I don't know. I just think it's a little early to, like, what? Like,
sure.
The Rangers game was a, I don't know, what do you call that? Like, moral victory, are we calling that? Like, I know they were shorthanded, yeah, manpower-wise, like, all that holds true, but that was a Rangers team that then went and got its teeth kicked in by Edmonton and lost to Calgary, right? Like, they weren't, so I just want to wait and see a little more. Like, I'm not worried, I'm just less willing to declare everything back to good and normal.
Because they beat Ottawa?
You know, after a victory against a bad Ottawa team,
yeah,
frankly, that still, you know, actually seems to have figured some things out, but just isn't getting the goaltending right now, which is ironic. I wonder if I could think of somebody who might be able to help in that department for them, who may have worked with both their goaltenders in the past. That's interesting. But yeah, no, I mean, it was better. It was really good. I thought there were a number of opportunities around and in front of the net that Ottawa had earlier in that game where if they just could have got a stick on it and elevated, you know, that game might have turned some chances that didn't end up on net that looked to be pretty good. And so I know it was a lot more decisive than the 4-3 final indicates. I guess what I would say is, we have seen signs of the Canucks that everyone is expecting this year against lesser opponents on multiple occasions this year, pronounce them fixed, as many did coming off the California road trip, and then watch them take a step back afterwards. And so to say after the Ottawa game that they've rediscovered their identity and expect that to be permanent, I just think is a little it's a little premature. Fair?
I think it's very fair. I think the...
You're always allowed to disagree with the premise of my question. First of all, I asked, are you buying it?
Yeah.
So it's fair to say, no, I'm not buying it.
The truth.
I'm not buying it. I just think we're, you know, like we want to declare this, bang, they're back. Like I saw so many people declare, bang, they're back after they got out of California. And it's like, I don't, you know, I said this to you guys when I was in there with you in person. I'm not convinced LA is a good team. Everybody called that a signature win, and the Kings were coming off an Eastern swing. So
yeah.
I just, you know, we need to see more sample. And frankly, I don't even know if we'll see it on this road trip, given the quality of opponents.
Yeah. The truth is, I think, Kevin, is that we're just relieved to see the Canucks play like a focused, disciplined series of consecutive games, because that inconsistency of effort, that inconsistency of focus, especially as it's manifested itself with, you know, iffy starts game in, game out. To me, that's been prominent, like a prominent feature of what we've seen from this team so far. And at the very least, whether you're buying it or not, I think Rangers and Ottawa, they were up at the start. They were ready to go. And the work rate didn't flag. The disciplined play didn't flag as the game went on. That to me is where I'd be.
I would say in the Rangers game, some of the defensive miscues did. Mm. I would say some of the, you know, wingers that I think they thought came into this group with an identity defensively that haven't played to it yet, at least not the defensive identity that Tocchet wants in terms of how they are on the walls, how hard they are on sticks coming back, how hard they come back in general. How many times did we hear on that homestand about line changes?
Mm-hmm.
I think there are still some of those staples that I will grant you in the Ottawa game to the extent we can see it on TV, and line changes is one you often don't, but not willing to grant that on the New York game, to be quite honest, even though, and they should get back to their identity because they're missing all their top end talent. They can't rely on it to just sort of carry the day for them. So you have to dig in a little bit when this happens. I just think it's way too short a sample to say that they're back, but I will agree with you. There have been signs. I didn't see the Rangers game the same way a lot of the other people seem to.
Yeah, that's fair. And then obviously then you're just talking about one decent performance, right, in the Ottawa game. And I guess the way I would look at it is I'm not going to sit here and say, okay, they're back. But if the Ottawa game at least was the type of performance where if they string a bunch of them together in a row, and, you know, that's the rub, that's the hard thing to do. But at least it was the type of performance where if they stack them up together, then it will feel like, okay, they've really started to refine their identity, right? And, you know, you got to start with one before you string multiple together.
Fair. I'll give you that one. Like, they're trending in the right direction.
There we
based
go.
Based on the one game against the Ottawa.
The big one game trend in the right direction so far for the Canucks.
For what it's worth, though, Kevin, I think the team was pretty happy with the New York Rangers thing. Not the players. Like, I think, you know, the coaches, management, like, I think they looked at the Rangers game as, you know, something that at least sort of stemmed the tide in terms of the lack of focus. And I think that really stems from that first shift where you get the Quinn Hughes goal and you got a bunch of one battles. And, you know, I think that mattered given sort of this team's habit of maybe not showing up on time over the course of the season.
There are things that we have seen that are troubling that were fixed in that game. And so they can be happy about that. There were other things that we've seen that have been troubling off and on throughout the start of the season that weren't.
Yeah, that's fair. One of the bright spots in that win against Ottawa, and even in just the short period they've been together, the underlying numbers look really good, is the Pettersson with DeBrusque and Sherwood. And, you know, now with JT Miller out, that's the top line. Pettersson's the top center. what have you thought of that line? And, you know, especially of what Kiefer Sherwood has been able to deliver in a in an elevated role after signing, you know, a $1.5 million deal in the summer with the Canucks.
Yeah, it sure looks good. I mean, we've seen the shot, you know, and I don't think it's really easy to see the one against Shesterkin and be like, ooh, like that's got an odor to it because it goes under him. But I think when you understand Sherwood's delivery and the way he gets that off without any backswing or any tell, that's one of the best goalies in the world, and he fooled them. And then I think sort of the icing on the cake that sort of show you how deceptive that release is and how much trouble it's giving goaltenders is in the same game from a similar spot. He gets it past Shesterkin's glove and drills him right in the mask. And Igor has really good hands, and I think that caught him by surprise again and was a puck he expected to catch. And instead, he had to take his mask off and check his teeth after. So clearly, you know, what they saw in terms of the shot he has and the offensive upside that comes with it is panning out, and especially on this line. And then you see him off the rush the other day. I mean, the ever so slight lean into a potential shot and then on his forehand curls it over to DeBrusk, makes a great, you know, slot line pass. And as a goaltender, like all Mark has is a slide across rather than beat it on his skates, because he kind of half committed to Sherwood. And again, the way he sort of, like, goalies are going to figure out quickly they have to respect that shot because of the release, because of how seamlessly he gets it off, because of how little tell there is. And DeBrusk with a great play to drag it back and make it a double slot line play, which, I mean, those go in basically over 65% of the time if you can pull it off. But in this case, the reason Ullmark's so committed to the slide to the right is because he's late making that push because of the job Sherwood did selling it. So, and then you add all the hits into it, right? So it's kind of, they can play it any way, that line. You know, I mean, we've seen Pettersson dial up the physicality when things weren't going well and sort of continue that even as things are going well. I mean, obviously the Stützle hit is the highlight reel, but I think there's other times in that game where he's playing a much more physical brand of hockey. And, well, that may not be the sort of expectation or what you're paying for per se. That level of engagement bodes well, because you know damn well come the playoffs, teams are going to try and make him go away by being, because of the success teams had with it last year, that's going to be the mark on him until he can prove it otherwise. And so the fact he's not relying purely on skill, that there's a lot of sort of grind to his game right now, whether it's going well or wasn't early in the season, I think that bodes well. And the mix of the three, like Jake DeBrusk may be the least physical of the trio, right? And he brings that speed and that dynamic element off the rush. It's a nice mix, and it's obviously going very, very well right now at a time when they need it.
We were having this debate in the first segment briefly, Kevin, and I'm curious to get you to chime in on it. We were debating whether Kiefer Sherwood has been the most impactful Canucks free agent signing or whether Kevin Lankinen has. How would you weight sort of the two in terms of a player that without whom, well, a player without whom the Canucks might be in severe trouble?
Oh, well, it's Lankinen early and Sherwood of late, right?
So you're King Solomoning this. You're cutting the baby in half.
Yes, I prefer not to do that. The latter,
but try to avoid that generally.
Sounds a little grotesque. Both my kids survived, so my parents' skills are a little better than that. But like at the beginning of the season, it was clearly Lankinen. And yet for a while now, he's been below expected, in wins. And even last night in a loss with the two late goals, leave him sort of underwater statistically again against the Senators, but still delivering in big moments. So, I am doing that. If you were to make me choose, I would pick Lankinen, because I think the stability he provided to this group early in the year was obviously much needed. And if we're talking about wins and losses, I'm trying to think of how many you tied directly to that Sherwood, Pettersson, DeBrusk line of late versus how many you would put squarely on the back of Lankinen for the first month of the season. And I think I probably tipped towards Lankinen, but it is largely on the work that was done early in the year compared to what's happening right now.
Where what's going on with Lankinen's game? Is there a particular part of his game that sprung a leak, as it were?
Not so much sprung a leak. I mean, we have talked about that as you become a number one, teams start to sort of look for things and target things. I talked about how incredible his numbers were on the blocker side earlier this year. And relative to that, the numbers like sub 700 high glove. So are more teams, when they get a look, have they got enough data now to say, oh, well, we better shoot this high glove instead of the blocker side where he's so good? Maybe. He's getting killed a little bit on broken plays. I think that ties into both his strengths and weaknesses and the team's up and down inability for long stretches to defend the front of the net. We've talked about how poor the net front defense has been for stretches at the start of the year and in certain games since then. And because of a size limitation for him, like, he's got to be a little further up in the blue ice. And so anything that gets spilled off to his flanks, as quick as he is, he's only getting a leg over there, right? So, like, we've seen a lot of pucks tapped into the side of the net or lifted above an outstretched pad at the side of the net. 9 goals so far this season on broken play. So that's an area that, you know, I don't know that you blame the goaltender so much as a combination of his strengths and weaknesses with a team that's not doing a very good job in front of the net. Slot line plays are a little down, 8 goals that way. Those would be, you know, and the other thing is, you know, low percentage goals, were up to 6 on the year. And that's a little uncharacteristic. I think a couple of them were just clear-sighted shots against Edmonton, and that was probably the end of a game that was going the wrong way in a stretch where he had played too much and a little bit of fatigue. But the goalie that's given up the most in the entire NHL right now is 8, and he's at 6. So a couple of sort of uncharacteristic lower percentage goals. But I think for the most part, it's just, you know, it's kind of volume adding up a little bit. Maybe teams figuring out a couple of things. And one of those things being, if we can get pucks off to the side, off those scramble plays in front, and the Canucks aren't defending it, that's where there's some susceptibility.
So, of course, one of the other big questions, to put it mildly, with the Canucks goaltending situation is when we're going to see Thatcher Demko, what his workload will look like and all of that when he does come back. And we've certainly started to see progress with him practicing with the team. He spoke to the media last week after a practice before they went out on the road. Now, one thing Drance and I have talked about on the show is kind of the consideration of starting him for his first game back on the road versus waiting until you're back home at Rogers Arena for an extended stretch to get him in. Could you kind of explain for us, like, what are the different considerations that go into that? Why would it potentially be more advantageous to wait until he's back, to wait until the team is back at home to get him that first start?
Oh, I honestly can't think of a ton of reasons. You know, unless there's special medical required post game or treatments that he can't get on the road, but I can't imagine that to be the case. I think they would make sure they're traveling with whatever he needs. And I don't know, you know, I don't know that there's anything apart from the normal that he would require. So the team's playing better on the road. The team's especially defending better on the road. There's less pressure on the road, I would think. I kind of expected hunch, and there was some talk from some people with other sources around the league about this road trip potentially being where he returns. And obviously, his, as positive as everything was last week, he talked about wanting to make sure he put it through hell so that he knew when he came back, it was back for good. And that, I think that led a lot of people to think maybe it wasn't quite as close, but I wouldn't be shocked. He's doing everything in practice. Like everything, like every move a goalie needs to make, he's doing it. I haven't seen the goalie sessions like we used to in the past as often, so I haven't seen the work he's doing there, the pace he's playing with. But like reverse double seals, everything in and around the post, like he's doing all of it, right? So, and I think that's encouraging on two fronts. One, and this actually goes to one of his answers to the question last week at UBC, and watching him go through the paces there again, doing everything that a goalie needs to do, was he talked, and he seemed to be quite pointed about it, wanting to sort of drive home the point that he knew all along that he wouldn't have to change his style. And we've talked about this. I've talked about this, about wondering whether they would ask him to change his style. And so him talking about not doing it, I think that's a real positive in terms of his system. But it's interesting because the way he answered the question, it almost sounded irritated about maybe some of the reporting or the talk about him changing his style. And he was answering the question in terms of the knee and the knee injury not requiring him to change his style. But I think the point would be, he's probably not aware of this, the reason the question was being asked is there are people in the organization that seem to have tied the injuries to the style of play and the amount of stress that puts on his body. Not the knee, not being able to do it because of the knee injury, but did it lead to some of the injuries multiple over the last couple of seasons? At the end of the day, like, he's the best in the world at what he does and playing that system and the degree to which he has perfected it and nailed it down. So the fact that he's not thinking about changing it at all, like, to me means when he does return, he'll be able to play somewhat instinctually and not have to worry about also trying to make changes to, you know, his structure, his system, per se. And that was a real positive. I found the way it was answered a little interesting, but a positive nonetheless that he's planning on coming back and playing the same way he did before.
Kevin, we saw Silov sort of have a bounce back performance in that Rangers game. He looked solid. It looked like he outperformed expected by a bit. Like, at the very least, I don't know that you'd look at that and say he cost them even a goal above what the Rangers earned, given the amount of chances they generated. Did you see a noticeable improvement? Is that something he can build off?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The Rangers had 11 high danger chances. And that's one of the reasons, you know, I was a little less enthusiastic about that game. It's what they gave up. They gave up a ton. Like, 11 high dangers is a lot. Over 4 expected goals. That's a lot. And so you're right. Arturs had a game where he was actually better than expected on a night where he gives up 4. Still a little bit, there's a little bit extra there early in games, a little bit extra movement, not quite chase, but close to it at times. Think of the deflection on the first goal where he's sliding one way, you know, a shift gives you a chance to stay in a lane. He actually slides almost to the point where by the time it goes in the net, you know, he's not in it, catches him going the other way. Still a great, you know, all 4 goals were high danger. So a real high danger chance. But that little extra motion, a little bit of extra push rather than, like I said, such a subtle thing for a goaltender, a shift versus a slide on a screen tip. Little things like that early, but I thought as the game went on, you really sort of saw signs of the Arturs that we saw, you know, especially in the playoffs last year. And I think there were also some moments in there where, you know, the Rangers did test him with some screens and some traffic. And I've said all along, like, that just takes time. He needs reps at the NHL level to figure out NHL traffic and the reads and how to find the lanes and which side to be on of a screen. And that's just experience. And you can sort of see that building already. So I think there's a lot of positives to each of his 2 starts sort of since the protracted absence and not getting in for so long and being sent down to the American League to get a game. There's a lot of positive signs there. I think you could fairly make the argument they might have waited a little long to get him back in the net. But good on him. Like, we've seen this throughout. There are things in his game that still need to evolve and get better, but mental strength is not something, or, you know, the ability to rise to occasion or to not be overcome by the pressure, because there was a lot of pressure in both of the starts for him to sort of rise above that. Those are things that I don't think anybody should question about Arthur Shelov anymore.
Woodley, looking ahead to the Boston game tomorrow, and, you know, raw numbers for Jeremy Swayman don't look pretty. Obviously, I think goaltending a big reason that ultimately Jim Montgomery got let go there for the Bruins. As I said, I'm looking at the raw numbers and it doesn't look great. What do the advanced numbers say, and just the eye test? What are you seeing from Jeremy Swayman this year?
I don't like to talk out of my posterior,
sure,
and I haven't watched a ton of Bruins, so I won't tell you the eye test. I'll just go to the numbers on this one, and they're not pretty. Like, goals saved above expected, like, he's -6.5. He ranks 72nd out of 76 goalies.
Yikes.
In the NHL. By the way, 76 out of 76 right now is the guy who lifted the cup last year.
All
74th
right.
is Linus Hallmark. So, And 71st is Stuart Skinner. So there's a bunch of guys down at the bottom of that list that I don't think we would necessarily have expected. I mean, Bob in particular and Linus Allmark as well. Adjusted save percentage isn't quite as bad. He's 57th out of 69 goalies that sort of qualify for that list. But, you know, again, he is normally polar opposite, at least plus 1.7%. He's minus 1.7 right now. His numbers just have been so, like, steadfastly in the top 15 ever since he broke into the league in the adjusted side, and they're near the bottom of it right now. How much of that is changes in terms of environment? Boston leaned on its goaltending a lot more heavily last season as well, and both goaltenders held up. How much of it is missing camp? You know, missing time, getting used to a different group in front of him. We've talked a lot about sometimes systems don't change, but when you have different personnel, your ability to read off defenders as a goaltender and trust that they'll do certain things in certain areas, that changes from year to year. The pressure of being a number one, like it's different, right? Until you've done it, you haven't done it. And this is him going through it. I just don't think they did him or themselves any favors, frankly, by not getting that contract done sooner.
Yeah.
And missing a full training camp and all the reps. And so, you know, there's a little caveat there. Like, it'll be interesting when Thatcher gets back in, right? Because, you know, Jeremy Swayman was skating with the Bruins, captain skates, working with goalie coach Bob Asenza, like all the stuff they normally do in the summer, you know, in August, right up until camp, and then he missed it. Thatcher hasn't had a camp. He hasn't had his regular summer skates. Like, he's missed so much of this. And even though he's getting those reps right now with Marco Terenius, you know, I think he said it himself last week, like he needs to give himself a little grace here. We saw it when he came back from the knee injury last year, like even the first game of the playoffs, you know, and the last two of the regular season, there were some uncharacteristic goals. You might see a little bit of that early. And I think when you look at what's happening to Swayman, even though Thatcher's done this before, come back after an absence, it's usually after having gotten some runway in the season before the injury. So to do it without that start, you know, guys tend to find that a little more difficult. And I think we're going to have some patience. As good as he is, and he's among the best in the world, and he might buck that trend, expecting it just because it's happened before, I don't think is fair to him or realistic. There needs to be a little grace here for a guy who's missed so much time.
Woodley, appreciate the time. As always, thank you for doing this. We'll chat again soon.
Thanks, guys.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. Final segment on the other side. You can send your text in 650-650. Some interesting quotes coming out of Canucks practice, so we'll see if we get any audio, or at least we can pass them along and chat about them. Final segment of Canucks Talk next here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. So the Canucks practicing today in Boston at Boston University. Actually looked like some very nice facilities at Boston University based on what the Canucks were posting on their social feeds. They play the Bruins tomorrow, of course, and one of the big items of interest from Canucks practice is the status of Brock Besser. In fact, Brock Besser spoke to the media not very long, only about a minute here, but we'll play Besser in just a second. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet as well after that on the status of Besser, how he's feeling, the possibility of him playing tomorrow. So first of all, here is Brock Besser.
How did full practice feel?
It felt great. Yeah. Anytime you get to go back out there with your teammates and be able to skate full contact, it's it's a nice little treat.
So how much have you been able to work on cardio so before today you're ready to go out?
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard to mimic, you know, game shape. But, you know, they've begged me a few times and pushed me really hard on the ice. So, you know, I've been working hard and I've been feeling better and better out there. And, you know, it's just really hard to judge until you really step in that first game. And just got to make sure you keep short shifts and kind of control it that way.
Do you feel like you're ready to go?
Yeah, I mean, it was my first full contact practice. So we'll see how the rest of the day goes. And, you know, if all good, then hopefully I'm in tomorrow.
Did anybody hit you in the head out there?
No, luckily not. Luckily not.
How did...
That was Brock Besser with our colleague Ian McIntyre giving him the questions there. And the key thing from Besser right at the end, right, which is him saying, we'll see how the rest of the day goes and tomorrow. But if everything's fine, then he's on track to make his return against the Bruins. And he talked about his recovery process, you know, doing the bag skates and stuff apart from the main practice. And then that final kind of check mark of the full contact practice today with his team. So again, from Brock Besser, if everything goes well between now and game time tomorrow, he should be able to make his return to the lineup against the Bruins. That's Brock Besser. Let's hear from the head coach, Rick Tocchet. He talks about Besser a little bit and some other stuff. So here is Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet.
So how did Brock look to you?
I look good today. I do look good. So I'll talk to him later this afternoon, see if he's ready to go tomorrow, but he looked good.
As long as he doesn't have any sort of setback for us and gets like a green light, he'll be in tomorrow.
Yeah, he hasn't had any the last bunch of days anyways, but, you know, we ramped it up a little bit today. So, you know, these things you want to make sure. So we'll talk him later this afternoon.
So you're coming off a big emotional win. What does it do when you get a guy like that back? Obviously still missing some key players, but what does it do for the team at home?
Well, you know, for Brock, for our team, he's our scorer, right? Last year, this year, playoffs last year. So you're just adding a guy that can instantly, you know, add offense. But we got to stay with our identity of our team. And, you know, so, and Brock's part of that. You know, Brock plays the game really well without the puck. He's usually out there last minute of a game if we're up a goal. So, you know, that you're adding a score, but you're also adding a system guy, which is great.
And at this point, you don't want to mess with that first line with the game they had in Ottawa?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not even about first, second, or third line. It's just about a puzzle, you know, and we'll see where Brock plays.
Jake broke out the last game. Where is his game right now?
Yeah, I think he's coming. I think there's certain things that getting used to the system, used to a few things, how we want things done. And I thought, especially last game, he was close to the puck. He was stopping on piles. Like, he's closer to people. You know, I think that's when he's at his best. And then when he has a chance to go, take off.
I'm sure you're still kind of just getting to know him. You know, maybe 20 games in. But how have you found, like, the best way to approach him to get the response out of him as a coach?
Information. Almost every day. Talk to him every day. Give him something. You don't want to overload guys. But when you get a guy... Who's a really good hockey player? You know, you hear this. You know, I hear inconsistent a lot from him, and that's my job to make him consistent. So, how do you do that? For me, is information. Talk to him a lot. You know, show him video on the bench, and I think that's something that I've tried to do more and more as the seasons went on.
How's Heinen been as a fit?
Yeah, he's a smart guy. You know, he's a guy who can plays up and down the lineup. Whether he played with Millsy early in the year or Teddy Bluger, or, you know, I've moved him around, and I think he's a smart guy that he can play different positions.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after his team practiced in Boston today. Of course, they're taking on the Bruins tomorrow as they continue their road trip. First of a back-to-back set, they play Boston and then the Pittsburgh Penguins, and we'll talk about it more on Wednesday, I'm sure, but... I've been following your athletic colleague, Josh Yohe, and some of his articles recently on the Penguins, and man,
yikes.
Man, it is entertaining
but you know
to
what?
Read those.
You don't want, like, the problem is, it's like the Sharks last year. Now, right now, the Sharks are actually, like, kind of good, relatively speaking, relative to what they
were
a year
ago.
They're
not like a tire fire right
They're
now.
Not a complete patsy. Put it this way. When you lose to the Sharks, you, and I mean the royal you, like your fan base, should not... lose their minds about how this season is spilling out of control and how could that possibly happen. Like, the Sharks are now like a normal, not particularly competitive NHL team, right? That's the level they've got to, which is a significant leap from where they were a season ago.
Yeah, especially a year ago right now, right? Which was like right around when the Canucks were putting 10 goals on them and everything.
The Penguins, though, feel kind of like the late era Sedins to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's just like, yeah, they can beat you, I guess, but that's a team you should take care of business. The late era Sedin Canucks, to be clear, not the Twins themselves. Yep. It wasn't on them. That's how they feel to me. And that's a dangerous opponent on the second leg of a back-to-back in some ways. You know, because you won't have the legs necessarily to punish them off the rush the way that if you're fresh, you are going to skate them off the ice, especially this Canucks team with the speed that they've got. Little tougher to do when you've, you know, played Boston. Might be a physical game, right?
Yeah.
Certainly that's a game that's going to matter a lot to a lot of Bruins players, especially Zadorov and Lindholm.
Yeah,
it's
a big money on the board game both ways. And right, with DeBrusque and Heinen on the Canucks.
And you've got the new coach.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is the coaching bump Bruins. They've won two in a row, right? They've won two in a row since Montgomery was gone. This is their third game since. They haven't played particularly well, by the way, under Sacco. But, you know, we know what these games look like and can look like. And also, I think we should think that the Bruins are a little bit better than the dreadful level they've been at this season. Certainly, they're capable of playing better. So, you know, I don't want to overlook. There's a real this trip is beginning to feel, especially after a mojo restoring kind of performance in Ottawa, beginning to feel from the outside like, hey, maybe this is more of an opportunity than, you know, a potential
than a threat.
You're doing than a potential
the SWAT,
hold
the SWAT analysis.
Yeah. An opportunity more than a threat, which it kind of felt like at the outset.
Absolutely,
with the club having lost two in a row, and you know the tail end of that road trip, the Islanders game, the Chicago game was brutal. The Nashville game was not great. The Rangers loss, right? Like those four games, and then you lose JT Miller on top of it. It's just like, oh man, you know, I know the competition's soft on this road trip, but it feels pretty dangerous for this team at the moment. I think it's now beginning to feel like more of an opportunity, but let's not overlook 4-6 on the road. Tough. That's tough.
Yeah, it absolutely is tough. And you're right. I mean, we saw how fast the mood can flip with a win in Ottawa, right? And it could flip right back the other way, depending on that game, how that game in Boston goes tomorrow. And of course, we'll dig more into that one tomorrow. And then, as I mentioned, the Penguins on Wednesday as well. I do just want to pass along the two quotes from your Athletic colleague, Josh Yowie, on the Penguins that really stuck with me. And this was after Crosby gets his 600th goal in a blowout loss on home ice, right? And it's just a miserable way for a franchise icon to reach that milestone. It's a tough game for that team.
At least it was the 2-1 goal.
Sure.
Like, at least it was a goal.
It was early
in
the proceedings before it got out of hand.
Maybe we have a chance at getting back in this.
Still afterwards.
So the goal still mattered.
Yeah, but and you know how it is, right? When something positive happens, especially a milestone, but the team gets
for sure
worked, and you have to ask about it after the game, and it's just like pulling teeth for the players to talk about it, right?
It would really have sucked, though, if it was like the 7-1
Yes,
goal.
Absolutely. It really would.
Like,
but anyways, the two quotes that stood out to me, one, now the Penguins smell like decay. They smell like decay. That's an incredible thing to say. And the other one was just flat out, the Penguins are unspeakably bad. So like, it is as dire as it gets for the Pittsburgh Penguins right now. Unspeakably bad and smelling like decay. The Canucks, not their next opponent, but their one after that. All right, back to Rick Tocchet, who we heard from just a few minutes ago. And a couple of things he mentions there. And one, just giving us the update on, you know, he's going to check with Brock Besser if everything goes well, as we heard from Besser himself. Good chance for him to play against Boston. And, you know, I think Tocchet makes a really good point there. We're talking about the process of this team refining their identity. I think Brock Besser is underrated as a carrier of their identity, right? Like we don't talk about him as one of the drivers of the team, because that's Hughes and Pettersson when he's at his best, and Miller and Demko. We all know, we saw last year, he hits the 40 goal plateau, what he can do as a complementary player. But when you do think of the identity, right, and the work along the boards, the defensive conscience, all of those things, that's Brock Besser, man. Like, Brock Besser is a huge part of that. And I think we saw, now obviously there was other stuff going on as well with JT Miller, but we saw, you know, how much JT Miller missed Brock Besser in those few games that he played before, you know, he took his leave of absence when Brock Besser was out of the lineup. So it's, you know, on the one hand, you're not going to, Besser's not that play driving type of player where he's going to come in and, you know, line up with Bluger and Heinen and you expect him to really drive offense with that group, with those line mates. But I think it could be a huge boost as they try to refine their identity a little bit here. Like, he's a hugely important player to that process. Does so many of the things that Rick Tocchet values from his wingers in particular. That's why he's their best winger in addition to the goal scoring. And I think it could be a really big deal for this team to get him back.
For sure. Now, the third line, or the sort of role, right, that he's likely to start in, I think makes this slightly more interesting from an overall opportunity perspective, right? You do expect there to be something of a lingering impact, right? From the concussion.
Yeah.
The apparent concussion from the Jeannot hit. Let's put it that way. And, you know, fair enough. I think we have to be a little bit patient.
Absolutely.
With this player here as they, you know, are coming back effectively from a pretty significant injury. Mm-hmm. Right? That's how we have to talk about this.
Well, and Besser himself was saying, right, like, hey, short shifts, it's, you can do all the bag skating you want, right? But it's completely different actually going back into a game environment and the effort and the stamina that that requires. So, yeah, you have to be patient. I mean, just like we've talked about with Joshua, right? But even though the production hasn't started to come for Joshua, I think we've started to see him get closer to what he can do. And again, I think just with Besser, it doesn't have to be that he comes in and, you know, starts lighting the lamp on the power play or in that role, in that third line role, really even looking dangerous offensively. But just having him back and a guy who can check so many boxes for what Tocchet wants to do, right? Another option late in games, another option in key defensive situations. That's a really big deal for this team, even if the offensive stuff, understandably, will take a little bit longer to come back and a little bit longer to develop. And then really, it might be until Miller's back in the lineup, right? And you can reunite that duo, especially with Pettersson locked into Sherwood and DeBrusk right now. Mm-hmm. There's not like another obvious landing spot for where that's a really good offensive role for Brock Besser at the moment.
Yeah. Well, and that's sort of, I think, the rub is I do think this line, like this line potentially, right? The idea of having to play with Heinen and Bluger, you know, I think that puts a lot on Besser.
Yeah. And I don't, and again, that's why I don't think the expectation should be like he comes in and they are, you know, spending all night in the offensive zone, right?
No.
It's not realistic with those line mates.
No. And, you know, so we're expecting Pew Suter to stay with Garland and Joshua, right? That's an interesting line. I like that, by the way, because Bluger had so much more offensive success, and I do think you have to be thinking more process-oriented. Like, I think it's a good look on Tocchet that he's open to seeing what Suter does there as opposed to just treating the Bluger, Garland, Joshua trio as a safety blanket.
Locked in.
We've seen him go to it, right? Like, I do think there's safety for Tocchet in that trio, but seeing enough in Suter offensively and seeing enough in that trio, despite the fact that they were so snake bit offensively in their sort of month together, to me that is pretty good evidence of a process-oriented, data-driven coach. Like, I think that matters, and I think that's a good look on Tocchet. Now, Heinen, Bluger, Besser, we've seen Besser play, like when he came back from, I think it was the lower body injury in 2019-20. Right? Mm-hmm. Right before, I guess he came back and played like one game.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think so.
It was the Islanders game, and then they didn't play again because of the pandemic. But earlier, I guess, it was before when Besser fell off of the lotto line before he got hurt in that season. He played a little bit with like Roussel and Gaudette, and he actually drove pretty effectively down lineup. But that was a Besser who was, you know, not coming off of a serious.
Sure.
Apparent head injury. And, you know, I think this is a player who can drive. He hasn't often been counted on to do it, partly because he's played with centermen who we're more likely to credit with being drivers on his line, right? Miller or Pettersson, and sometimes both. But I do think he can do it. And you know, maybe not at the level of Garland down lineup, but mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to be overmatched once he's at, you know, full speed, once he's at the peak of his powers. I think he's going to be capable of crushing it against a sort of down lineup.
Yeah, if he's in that position for a long time, yeah.
But it's certainly not an ideal spot to be reintroducing him into the lineup, I don't think. You know, that line with Sherwood had some offensive pop in a couple of games against, like, Chicago and San mm-hmm. Jose. But, you know, I don't think there's a ton of offensive chops on a Heinen-Bluger pair that'll sort of help Besser.
Although, right? I've liked Bluger's offensive game this year, to be honest.
I've liked Bluger's game, period,
yes,
this year.
Yes, that's fair. But, yes, normally we think of the defensive side of things, so I have liked his overall game, but I've also in particular liked his offensive game. I think he's been good. Like, good for, you know, for his role.
For sure. Yeah, he's been good. Do we want, though, like, yeah, I think there's some limitations, is all I'd say.
Sure, of course, of course.
But you're right. He's been sharp in all phases of the game. Bluger's just a good player. Period.
Yes.
I think you get to a point where it's like we can debate what you are or you aren't, but it's like Bluger's a guy who helps you win, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. He definitely has been this year. There's been no doubt about it. And, you know, I take your point about it's not an ideal spot for Besser to make his return necessarily. But again, where else do you do it? And if you're anticipating a ramp up period for him, which you should be, then I think it's okay to do it in a more limited role, right? And if you obviously are going to have a lot of time for Garland and Joshua together. So that's a right wing spot taken, right? With Connor Garland on a line with Dakota Joshua. And you're not going to mix up, you're not going to switch up what Kiefer Sherwood is doing next to Elias Pettersson right now. So you're out of options. I mean, that's it until JT Miller is back. So I don't have a problem with it. If one of those other lines really starts to falter, you've got a nice option in that you can kind of go to if you need to with Brock Besser, and that's fine. And look, when JT Miller's back at some point, then hopefully they can hit the ground running again. Speaking of Canucks wingers, and Rick Tocchet was asked about him a little bit. He scored two goals against Ottawa. We've already seen these kind of mini lengthy cold streaks and then mini hot streaks from Jake DeBrusk to start the year. Maybe he's on the cusp of another one. We've talked a lot about the Kiefer Sherwood effect on that top line. We've talked a fair bit about Elias Pettersson. Is he back? The third guy is Jake DeBrusk. What are you noticing from DeBrusk's contributions on that top line?
Yeah, I mean, well, the goals. That's a big
part. Are you noticing those?
I'm noticing,
like, hey, that
the goals.
Went in. That puck went in. Did everyone see that?
Hey, that's what matters here, man. You know, like
the sharp hockey.
But honestly, for DeBrusk, I think that matters a ton. You know, his shot rate has rebounded. You know, he's up mm-hmm. to about six and a half, right? Where he was at like four for a large portion of the season. I like to see that. Like 10 shots in his last three games.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to see more of. That's the first three game stretch where he's managed 10 shots. The other impressive one where he scored the three goals in three games on the road trip was 9. Like, that's it. That's all I want to see.
Yeah.
It's so simple, like, in terms of, you're not going to notice a lot of heaviness with DeBrusk, I don't think. You're going to notice the speed. You're mm-hmm. going to notice that actually he does some decent play driving stuff. You know, Miller, Besser, and now Pettersson, Sherwood, they've all succeeded with DeBrusk in terms of controlling play. So now, granted, he's often been playing on the line that's self-matched with Quinn Hughes, so some of that's probably not him, and in fact, I'm watching him and I don't know that he's primarily responsible for driving. So given that, what I want to see from sort of a non-physical top six winger who I think is good, who's got good speed, is positionally sound, but isn't like an impactful driver on his own, what I want to see is him actively generating scoring chances, actively being the recipient of scoring
chances.
Yes,
that's the key way of looking at it, I think. Right?
Yeah.
Like, he needs to be with players who are successfully controlling play.
Yes.
And then I think he can be a really good complementary player, and we're already starting to see a little of that next to Pettersson, who's now driving play.
Shots.
Yeah.
Period. Like, DeBrusk had 3 shots, 2 shots, 5 shots against Ottawa, 2 goals. Okay? When he's been quiet, you've had these long stretches, you know, you've had a couple 4-shot games, some 3, but it's not consistent. And then they go on that California road trip, 2 shots, 2 shots, 5 shots, right? It's like, That's what it takes. He needs to be at 2.5 shots a game. He needs to be at 7 shots an hour. He needs to be at 15, 16 shot attempts an hour. That's it. I want to see shots. I want to see him actually taking shots. And when he has for short stretches of the season, he's looked great. And when he hasn't, for longer stretches of the season, it's been easy to miss him.
And I just wonder how much of that is on his play and how much of that is the environment his line is creating. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's taking more shots now when the other guys are clicking. And I'm not, obviously he bears responsibility. He can always do more, right? He's a contributor to whatever line he's on as well. But I just, like, I don't know if he's changed as much or it's just now he's in a position to take more shots without having changed his game that much.
Well, when he's struggled on occasion, I've noticed that he goes to the net a little harder. Like, I think he goes to the net with a little more discipline. I think he's smart enough to know that if I go to the net, maybe one bounces in off my Tookus. Maybe I can score a Sam Lafferty, maybe I can, you know, pick up a loose puck, or maybe I can get a stick on a puck and it goes in the net, just like he did against Ottawa, you know? And so that's good. Like, if this team is generating shots and he's going to the net like that, he's going to get chances. If he's skating fast and in position and the team's turning pucks over in the neutral zone, we saw this a lot against Ottawa, he's going to get scoring chances. Like, I, you know, ultimately that's what he's there to do. He's there to put the puck in the net. He's there to get shots. And so, you know, whether it's in dirty areas, whether it's off the rush, he can get there in all kinds of ways because he's a very talented player. But he just needs to continue to be disciplined about finding ways to be on the receiving end of some of those, you know, setups, some of those point shots. And, you know, he's done a really good job of it the last three games, and it's mattered. It's been a good look on him. I don't know that he's done a great job of it consistently enough throughout the course of the season.
All right, that's the show for today. We'll leave it there. We'll be back on a Canucks game day. Yannick Hansen will join us on the show tomorrow. Always exciting to have Yannick here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.